Today we'll be reading the chapter The Two-Step Process to Changing Your Identity from the book Atomic Habits. Let's begin. Your identity emerges out of your habits. You are not born with present beliefs. Every belief, including those about yourself, is learned and conditioned through experience. More precisely, your habits are how you embody your identity. When you make your bed each day, you embody the identity of an organized person. When you write each day, you embody the identity of a creative person. When you train each day, you embody the identity of an athletic person. The more you repeat a behavior, the more you reinforce the identity associated with that behavior. In fact, the word identity was originally derived from the Latin word essentials, which means being, and identitem, which means repeatedly. Your identity is literally your repeated beingness. Whatever your identity is right now, you only believe it because you have proof of it. If you go to church every Sunday for 20 years, you have evidence that you are religious. If you study biology for 1 hour every night, you have evidence that you are studious. If you go to the gym even when it's snowing or raining, you have evidence that you are committed to fitness. The more evidence you have for a belief, the more strongly you will believe it. For most of my early life, I didn't consider myself a writer. If you were to ask any of my high school teachers or college professors, they will tell you I was an average writer at best. Certainly not a standout. When I began my writing career, I published a new article every Monday and Thursday for the first few years. As the evidence grew, so did my identity as a writer. I didn't start out as a writer, I became one through my habits. Of course, your habits are not the only action that influence your identity, but by virtue of their frequency, they are usually the most important ones. Each experience in life modifies your self-image, but it's unlikely you will consider yourself a soccer player because you kicked a ball once, or an artist because you scribbled a picture. As you repeat these actions, however, the evidence accumulates and your self-image begins to change. The effect of one of experiences tends to fade away while your effect of habits gets reinforced with time, which means your habits contribute most of the evidence that shapes your identity. In this way, the process of building our habits is actually the process of becoming yourself. This is a gradual evolution. We do not change by snapping our fingers and deciding to be someone entirely new. We change bit by bit, day by day, habit by habit. We are continually undergoing micro-evolutions of the self. Each habit is like suggestions. Hey, maybe this is who I am. If you finish this book, then perhaps you are the type of person who likes reading. If you go to the gym, then perhaps you are the type of person who likes exercise. If you practice playing the guitar, perhaps you are the type of person who likes music. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become. No single instance will transform your beliefs, but as the votes build up, so does the evidence of your new identity. This is one reason why meaningful change does not require a radical change. Small habits can make a meaningful difference by providing evidence of a new identity. And if a change is meaningful, it actually is big. That's a paradox of making small improvements. Putting this all together, you can see that habits are the path of changing your identity. The most practical way to change who you are is to change what you do. Each time you write a page, you're a writer. Each time you practice the violin, you're a musician. Each time you start workout, you're an athlete. Each time you encourage your employees, you're a leader. Each habit not only gets results, but also teaches you something far more important: to trust yourself. you start to believe you can actually accomplish these things. When the boats mount up and the evidence begins to change, the story you tell yourself begins to change as well. Of course, it works the opposite way. Every time you choose to perform a bad habit, it's a boat for that identity. The good news is that you don't need to be perfect. In any election, there are going to be votes for both sides. You don't need an anonymous vote to win an election. You just need the majority. It doesn't matter if you cast a few votes for a bad behavior or an unproductive habit. Your goal is simply to win the majority of the time. New identities require new evidence. If you keep casting the same votes you've always cast, you're going to get the same result you always had. If nothing changes, nothing is going to change. It's a simple two-step process. 1. Decide the type of person you want to be. And 2. Prove it to yourself with small wins. First, decide who you want to be. This holds at any level. As an individual, as a team, as a community, as a nation. What do you want to stand for? What are your principles and values? Who do you wish to become? These are big questions, and many people aren't sure where to begin, but they do know what kind of results they want. To get six-pack abs, or to feel less anxious, or to double your salary. That's fine. Start there and work backward from the result you want to the type of person who could get those results. Ask yourself, who is the type of person that could get the outcome I want? Who is the type of person that could lose 40 pounds? Who is the type of person that could learn a new language? Who is the type of person that could run a successful startup? For example, who is the type of person who could write a book? It's probably someone who is consistent and reliable. Now focus shifts from writing a book, that's the outcome-based, to being the type of person who is consistent and reliable, identity-based. This process can lead to beliefs like, I'm the kind of teacher who stands up for her students. I'm the kind of doctor who gives each patient the time and empathy they need. I'm the kind of manager who advocates for her employees. Once you have a handle of the type of person you want to be, you can begin taking small steps to reinforce your desire and identity. I have a friend who lost over 100 pounds by asking herself, what would a healthy person do? All day long, she will use this question as a guide. Would a healthy person walk or take a cab? Would a healthy person order a burrito or a salad? She figured that if she acted like a healthy person long enough, actually, she will become that person. And she was right. The concept of identity-based habits is our first introduction to another key theme in this book, feedback loops. Your habits shape your identity, and your identity shapes your habits. It's a two-way street. The formation of all habits is a feedback loop, a concept we will explore in depth in the next chapter. But it's important to let your values, principles, and identity drive the loop rather than your results. The focus should always be the becoming that type of person, not getting a particular outcome. And that's the end. Well, yeah, this was like a small chapter. And yeah, it talks about like the resume, the summary. You don't need to focus in the final result. You say, okay, I want to be the best programmer in the world. You don't need only that to become the best programmer in the world. There are like 100,000 of people trying to become the best programmer in the world, maybe. And they all have that desire. They all have the same objective. But how many of them are going to really be like the best developer in the world? I mean, Of course, not all of those hundreds or thousands of millions of people that are trying to become the best developer. So this chapter says that you need to become that person by taking maybe small steps. So asking yourself, what this developer with 10 years of experience, the guy who created React, the guy who invented Python, what are they going to do in this situation? So yeah, that's a helpful question, like for every decision. In my environment, I have like some team leads, tech leads, or more senior developers. And if I want to become like a senior dev, or I want to become a tech lead or a team lead, I'm thinking like I need to take or try to take the actions that they may take in the situations that I'm facing. For example, there's a bug. What's the tech lead going to say? He's not going to be quiet. I'm quiet, honestly, I'm quiet. When there's a bug or someone asks for help, I'm quiet and I try to do like a research by myself. But no, they just jump in and they try to figure it out. And they are communicative. They, for example, if you're using Slack, they respond. They answer like right away, saying, yeah, I can help you with this, or let me do a little bit of a research here. And they are saying that they are taking care of that. So yeah, maybe when there's a new feature, the junior dev is going to say, do you have any question? I mean, the junior dev is going to answer, no, I don't have any, all good. But now the tech lead or more senior developers are going to say, how is this new feature going to interact with the previous feature that we introduced? Don't know. They are going to make like some questions, and they are not going to be quiet. And I'm not sure if they are like doing those questions on purpose, only to demonstrate that they know more than the rest. I'm pretty sure that they genuinely make those questions because they don't know the answer. And maybe that's one thing that will help you. I mean, I'm just talking from my experience, but maybe that would be something that will help you to grow in your career. Like, don't be afraid to make some questions. And I'm just, throwing some thoughts here. But yeah, all of that was from reading that chapter. So it was pretty nice, pretty cool, small one. Hope you liked it and hope you learned something. And yeah, see ya.